Welcome back to Campbell Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today is episode 237 of the podcast, and I'm joined in conversation by Alex Wachowski. Alex is the creator of Alex and Books, where he shares book reviews, summaries, and reading tips to his audience of over 1 million followers across his social media channels. In today's episode, you can expect to learn how Alex went from a disengaged reader at school to a man who's now looked to online for his advice and insights based on what he's read. You'll learn about strategies for busy people and how they can read more, how you can retain and understand more of the information that you take in, maintain your attention for longer, and some of the hacks that you can utilize for actually selecting and picking books that you will really enjoy and get value from. From a business perspective, Alex also shares his insights on turning a side hustle into a full-time business, perspectives on growing online across various different types of platforms, the mistakes and lessons that he's learned from monetizing his audience, and the benefits that he's experienced in his life from both reading and creating content. You're going to take a lot away from this episode, and one of the best additions that I've made to my lifestyle in 2024 has been building back a consistent reading habit before I go to bed. And this episode is really going to help you to unlock that and the benefits that come with it. If you want to unlock the power of podcasting to grow your own personal brand, your network, and business opportunities, then I have built the perfect learning platform for you, and that is my podcast masterclass. That is the perfect platform for you to start, scale, and sustain your own podcast using the systems and processes that I've used. And in order to get the best possible guests, I've shared my outreach tips, my research advice, and how you can even structure conversations to get the most possible value from a conversation. And last but by no means least, within one of the modules, I also share my secrets to marketing and distributing your podcast to the maximum number of eyes and ears. Starting a podcast is no mean feat, but continuing it and growing it is even harder. I have got that problem solved for you, and I can help you if that's an area you want to improve. The link will be in the show notes to my podcast masterclass, thinkific.com. But that's quite enough from me in this introduction. All I want to say is make sure you've hit that follow or subscribe button wherever you're listening. And if you are listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please hit the 5-star rating. We have just broken through 450 5-star ratings on Spotify, and it's a huge help for the show continuing to grow into the top 1% globally and have fantastic conversations like this one with Alex. But as I said, that's quite enough for myself. You've got almost an hour and 6 minutes with myself and Alex after the music plays. Alex, welcome to the show. We lined up the diaries. We made it happen.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Colin.
And you're known online nowadays as Alex and Books, and you've created such a depth of resources and knowledge from all the stuff that you've read over these years. But I want to go back way before that and understand, where did this passion for reading and learning actually come from?
Yeah, so I think this would surprise most people, but I wasn't like a hardcore reader growing up. I think it happens to most people that, you know, maybe you like reading books as kids because, you know, you have the picture books or the comic books, and that makes reading kind of like enjoyable. But then you get to like middle school or like high school, where you're kind of like forced to read all of these like boring books like Shakespeare, or all of these books written like 100 or 200 years ago. So like, even though you understand English, you don't understand these books at all. And I think that like that happens to a lot of people, where you're kind of forced to read certain books. So you like stop reading altogether. And that's like what happened to me. So I just like completely stopped reading books. But then like halfway through college, I had this management professor, and he came in, he was wearing like a nice suit. He had like a gold Rolex, and he worked at IBM for like 25 years. So he was like super successful guy during like the heyday. So this is like, you know, just how like Apple now is at its peak. He worked at like IBM when it was at its peak. And he pulled out a book from like his briefcase, and he said, "This book is the reason why I've been successful. And like, if you only read one book in your life, you have to read this book." And that book was How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And I was like, huh, like usually teachers just assign like textbooks or something. Like I never, serious point, I never knew like self-improvement books existed up until that point. I thought it was like poetry books, fiction books, and textbooks. Like I thought it was like only those three pretty much. So that day I went to the bookstore, you know, bought the book, and I'm like, okay, I got to read 3 chapters for homework. And I started reading the book, and I'm like, wow, this is like as educational as a fiction book, but as like as educational as a textbook, but as entertaining as a fiction book. Cause it was just like these incredible stories, but also super helpful lessons. And then I realized like, oh, if I can learn like social skills from a book, like what else can I learn from, you know, a book? And the answer was like anything I wanted, like anything I wanted to learn. There was a book out there written by an expert who's, you know, spent 10 years studying the subject, and I could just spend $10, a few hours reading it, and basically learn and absorb their knowledge. So that book kind of changed everything for me, because I realized like anything I want to learn, any skill I want to get better at, there was a book out there that I could read and improve on. And so that was like a huge changing moment where I realized it's not that like I'm not a reader or books aren't for me. I just hadn't found the right book yet. Then I discovered that book, you know, and I just fell into loving reading.
I love that it was How to Win Friends and Influence People as well. I genuinely think the listeners would be extremely wealthy people if they had a pound for every time that it came up, or a dollar for every time that it came up on the podcast. And I completely resonate that it's one of those books where it arms you with such actionable steps thereafter that it's got that almost practical implication that many of the books that we feel compelled or forced to read during our schooling and our education, they don't give you that same feeling. And I think the kind of people that listen to a podcast like this one, and the kind of person that you are from getting to know you over getting organized for this episode, Alex, we want something that we can kind of feel has had a tangible benefit to it rather than just reading for the sake of it. And I think that's a trap that we fall into within the education system, that you must read this because it's going to get asked about at the end of the course. And you're like, oh, it right. feels a bit forced.
Yeah, I think school teaches you to read for memorization, but real life teaches you to read for application. So in school, it's like, oh, you have to read this book and memorize what it's about because there's going to be a test or exam on it and you want to pass the class. In real life, it's like, okay, if there's some skill you want to get better at, you want to read this book and then you want to apply what you've learned to actually like make changes in your life. And one more thing that professor did was like after each chapters that we read, he would actually make us practice like exercises. So we would have practice conversations. He would like say, you know, turn to the student on your left and then, you know, try apply these two lessons from it and then switch. So that way, you know, the other person's talking, you're like listening to the conversation. So it wasn't just like reading the book, but we were actually applying what we were learning. And I think that was really like the impactful part of it, because if all you do is read, but you never apply what you've learned, you still be in the same position as you were before.
Yeah, that's huge. And we're definitely going to talk about comprehension versus just reading for the sake of it during this conversation, Alex. But the reason that How to Win Friends and Influence People, I think, gets so many people started is exactly that. You turned to the student next to you and you were interested, not trying to be interesting. You used their name. You weren't about things that fired them up and you spoke about it more. And no wonder it gives you that kind of immediate positive feedback loop that, wow, this stuff that this guy wrote about, I don't know, 100 years ago, 80 years ago, depending on when you read the book, it's really relevant today because it really gets to the root of human psychology. And that has remained pretty constant, regardless of whether now we've got iPhones and gadgets and whatever else.
Yeah, that was another mind-blowing part of it. It's like this book was written like, I think, over 80 or 90 years ago, and it's like it's still super useful today. So it makes you think like what other books out there are like, you know, old but still like timeless. And like another book I read later on was like Meditation by Marcus Aurelius, and I'm like, wow, this book is written like 2000 years ago and it's still like super helpful, super practical today. So it just makes you think like, okay, there's so many books out there written by these people, and like, the fact that the book survived all of those centuries means that there's a lot of wisdom in it that people find useful. And then if you're not, you know, taking advantage of that, if you're not, you know, learning from other people, you're really missing out on just like a treasure trove, like insights and gems. So that's like another huge benefit from reading books.
Agree. And I don't want to spend the whole time having a go at the school system, but a quote that you share on your website is, school teaches you how to read, but it doesn't teach you how to become a reader. And I just wrote that down and I just nodded. I was like, completely agree. Like it teaches you how to understand what the sentence says and how to work your way through it, but it doesn't give you that passion or that energy or that focus to do it outside of school.
For sure. If you think about it, like when you're born, you don't know how to read. You're not born a reader. Like you have to learn the alphabet, and then after you learn that, you put it together into words. And then you understand words, and those turn into sentences, into paragraphs, into chapters, into understanding books. So school does a great job of teaching you how to read, but not how to be a reader. So like that's when I, you know, started reading all these books. But then I'm like, how do I decide what book to read next? How do I decide which books are worth reading? How do I remember more of what I've learned? How do I, you know, take notes on what I'm learning? How do I apply what, you know, all these lessons that I'm learning? And that's when I realized it's like, okay, I know how to read books, but I don't know how to be a reader. And that's kind of when I went on this journey, like, how can I become a better reader? And that's what I've been doing for like the past few years, just sharing like all the reading tips I've learned over the years, and now I'm putting them all into like a course where I'm just sharing like, okay, I've learned, I spent 5 years studying like the art of reading. Now let me teach people everything I know all in one place.
It is an art though, isn't it? And I really, really believe that. And when we were starting to speak beforehand and you were talking about the different things that you were building out and the different things you've done over the years, I was like, I can completely see that it's a skill set that we sort of have, but it's like hidden away and moved away. And like, I'll be completely transparent. My degree at university was politics. So much reading to do, so much reading. And in my second year, I think I had to read like Marx, I had to read Locke, had to was the key term. I didn't choose to. Yeah. Whereas now, because I'm actually interested in the process of reading and I know the benefits it gives me downstream, I would probably read Aristotle, not for, I don't want to say for fun, but for pleasure away from that. Whereas at the time when it was assigned to me, I had this kind of grudging feeling towards it and it felt heavy, it felt laborious and it felt unpleasant. Whereas now, if I think about where my interests lie and what I want to be quote unquote good at in the future, I can really see myself picking up that book through choice.
Yeah, for sure. That's something that happened to me and like a lot of readers out there. Like in high school, I remember being forced to read The Great Gatsby. I'm like, this book's written like 1925. Like it's not that interesting about the Roaring Twenties 100 years ago. But then like the movie came out and I watched the movie and then I really enjoyed it. And I'm like, oh, let me go back and reading the book. And now I reread it and it's like one of my favorite books of all time. So sometimes it could be a case of like the right book, but the wrong time. And also it's like when you're kind of forced to read certain books and you're not giving like a freedom of choice, it's just not enjoyable. Like, you know, someone tells you like, okay, this is what you're eating every single day. You're not going to enjoy as much as like if you have the freedom to choose it. So I think that's something, it's like a rite of passage all readers must go through. It's like once you finish school, you have to realize that you could read any book you want. You like any subject that you want to read. There's books out there that, you know, will teach you what you want to learn, or just anything you're curious about. There's a book out there that will, you know, satisfy your curiosity about a topic. So that's kind of like the best thing about reading is that there's so many books out there, but also one of the worst parts of, about reading is that there's so many books out there, it's sometimes hard to choose like which book to read next.
Paralysis by analysis sometimes in terms of what to read next. How did you go about improving your own reading ability, given that you felt that you were able to read but not a reader?
Yeah, so I split it up into like three different like topics. One's like you have to learn how to find and filter for amazing books. Then you have to figure out how to get more books into your life. And the last part is like how to get more life out of your books. So that's like if you're already reading, how do you get the most out of it? So any specific like topic or question you got in mind, happy, you know, answer it.
Yeah, absolutely. So for example, when we've got so much competition for our attention nowadays, Netflix, smartphones, and within our smartphone, we've got so many different options that we actually flip between the different options within the smartphone as well. Sometimes when we're doing that, what can we do to focus more on managing to actually read more?
Yeah. So best thing you could do is, I guess, when it comes to like preventing distractions. So the first thing you could do is like put your phone on silent and put it in another room. There's been studies that have shown that if you could just see your phone, even if you're not touching it, it's like you have to spend like 40% more energy just like resisting that temptation to like open it up. There's also been a ton of studies showing that people that read print books get a lot more reading done than people read on Kindle or iPads, because that temptation to like just go browse or open up a different tab is like always there. So you definitely want to put your phone on silent, put it in another room, find like a quiet location. You know, if there's a certain part of your house where it's like super active, like the kitchen or a lot of people coming in an hour doing stuff, like, you know, that's going to be super distracting. Another helpful tip I like is just literally put a post-it note on the cover of your book and say like, you know, you want to read for 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And then whenever you have like a thought or like just anything that comes into your mind, write it down on the post-it note and then get back into reading. Because a lot of times what happens, like, you know, you're reading a book and then you're like, oh, I forgot to go get the laundry, or I just remembered I got to buy, you know, milk later or buy bread later. Or it's like, oh, I forgot to answer that email. And then we get distracted and go do something else. I like to call it a distraction catcher. So literally just a post-it note on the book before you start reading, and like any thoughts or distractions that come to mind, just write it down and then go back to reading. And then once your reading session is done, like let's say, and once you're done reading for 15 minutes, then you could go look at your list and like go, you know, go act on the things on your list.
I wonder why all those things come up when you're reading. I think it's maybe because you actually create some sort of silence for the shortest period, 15 minutes. It's quite rare that we have 15 minutes to ourselves nowadays due to all the different notifications or the buzzing. So when the phone's away, you open the book up, your subconscious is probably like chucking all these things to the front of your mind to say, do these things. So I love that you've got a process for catching that and stopping you like withdrawing from that moment.
Yeah, for sure. So you want to stay in like that flow state of reading, because like even if something's short, like, oh, I forgot to, you know, text this person happy birthday, and then you go grab your phone, text you know, the person, and then maybe they respond right away and you start a conversation, or you see like email notification pop up and then you go down like a different like rabbit hole. You know, I found this tip super helpful, and so have other people. Literally just like anything that comes into your mind, write it down on the post-it note and then go back into reading, and then once your reading session is done, then you could go act on the other stuff.
Big fan of that. What about actually finding time to read in the first place?
Yeah, so the best two times to read are either early in the AM or late in the PM. So early in the AM means like, you know, basically as soon as you wake up, you know, pick up a phone and read for like 5 minutes. Pick up your book and read for 5 minutes before you pick up your phone. Or just like, you know, read for 5 minutes before, checking your emails or notifications or anything like that. One thing I would love to do is I would get to the office half an hour early, and then that way I could do my reading. Because I know for some people, if you have like anxiety or you hate being late, like you don't want to read at home, and then you might, you know, miss your train or something, and then you end up late at the office. So I would just go into the office half an hour early and just, you know, read for half an hour, and also be like super peaceful and quiet because not a lot of people are there. And also people see you reading while you're in the office and they think like, oh wow, this person's super smart or like hardworking. It's also great to like read in the morning, like maybe before your kids get up or before your partner gets up, because like the middle of the day is always super hectic. So that's always like the hardest time to do your reading. And the second part of it is reading late in the PM. So this is like maybe after the kids have gone to bed, when you know, after dinner, when you finally have some like free time and you want like wind down and relax before going to sleep. And it's also a great way to like kind of get tired and like, yeah, just wind down before going to bed. So you either read, I think, early in the morning, like starting your day, or late at night before going to bed.
The PM one is definitely which fits better in my schedule, Alex. I'm like quite go in the morning. I do gratitude journal and then I walk, which is great, and I get my mind moving. But I find that pre-bed, when I can get off my devices, it gives me extra time to read. And it's also creating more gap between me last getting the kind of stimulus of my phone and actually trying to get sleep. It improves the quality quite significantly. And I find that particularly if I've got a book to look forward to, and we'll definitely get onto that, I actually really look forward to putting my phone away. Whereas if I don't have that, I'm much more likely to stay up that little bit later scrolling and getting the entertainment from that than jumping into bed and looking forward to it as well. And if the carrot's there, it's so much more likely for it to happen. And I think it is the most obvious time for a lot of people who are quote unquote busy, which most people that listen to a podcast that are trying to better themselves are going to be in that bucket. Having that there is so vital.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's like everyone kind of tries to add reading kind of in the middle of the day, but you know, you got work, you know, you got kids, you got meetings, you have, you know, your workouts, all this stuff. So you really want to read on the bookends of the day, no pun intended, like either super early or super late in the day.
What's your best advice for people finding books that they're going to love?
I would say read it when you need it. So you want to figure out what's like my biggest problem right now, or what's something I really want to learn about, and then look for a book about that topic. So to give you a short story, when I was in college and I really, you know, first starting my reading journey, I'm like, okay, I want to be like a CEO one day or like a big business executive. So let me read a lot of management books. So I literally read like 5 different management books. And although I was reading, you know, so that was great, I was learning all this management advice, but I was literally in college and I had an internship. So I couldn't manage anyone. I couldn't apply any of this information. So it wasn't like super useful. And in fact, the books were kind of, you know, boring, even though they were good quality books. They were bestsellers, highly respected. Like, it just wasn't as interesting to me because I couldn't apply anything I was learning. Like, what I should have been doing was reading like books about marketing, or like, you know, books about self-improvement, or something that I could actually go and apply. So I would say, like, you know, if you're buying or selling a house soon, that's when you want to read negotiation books. But it doesn't make sense to read negotiation books now and then, you know, buy or sell a house 2 years down the road, because you're not going to remember a lot of the things that you learn. So you want to think about it as just-in-time learning instead of just-in-case learning.
That was one of the things that I wrote down, because I've heard you share before, and it'd be really relevant to any of the listeners that are getting into like sales or promoting products, that when you were getting ready to launch your Art of Reading course, you were like, oh, well, I'm actually more interested in copywriting now than I was previously. So if you'd been given that book to read on copywriting 9 months ago, 10 months ago, 12 months ago, you would have really had to like battle to get through it. Whereas when you've got like a tangible output on the end of it, when you read it, you're like, oh, wow, like I'm getting better at sales copy here. I'm getting better at my email copy. I'm going to attract more eyes and ears to my product page. It's so important, as you say, to have something like a use case from what you're reading.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, that's a great example. So like, I was never interested in like copywriting, or I'm like, what's the point of knowing how to write like sales emails or anything like that? But then once I started building out product, I'm like, oh, I need this. Same thing goes for like email marketing. So I remember when I was like graduating college and I was looking for jobs, and I remember seeing this post for an email marketer, and I think the salary was like like $120,000, or like, I'm like, wow, that's so much money. But then I saw a job description. It's like, write emails, send emails, you know, A/B test emails. I'm like, this is so boring. Like even though it's a lot of money, it's like, it's not worth it. I'm not going to do it. And now what I love doing is writing my weekly newsletter, where I'm like literally doing all this stuff. I'm, you know, A/B testing emails, you know, writing sales copy, you know, seeing how I get more subscribers, what people like, what people dislike. So I'm literally doing that job of, you know, for that's the job I'm doing now. Because I have like a mission behind it. And that's the same thing, you know, should go with your reading. Like, you should ask yourself, what's my mission? Like, what do I want to learn? Or what problem do I want to overcome? And then find books about those topics. And that way the book will be super relevant. It'll be super interesting to you, versus just me, people telling you like, oh, this book is a bestseller, so you should go read it. But if it's not like useful for you or not relevant, you know, that's not a good way to spend your time reading.
That's it. It could be a bestseller with the masses, but your circumstances could be radically different. So it doesn't overlap. Or your friend might read the book and love it, but they might be working towards something totally different at that point in their life. And you're thinking, yeah, oh, that's so bizarre. Like, for example, I've had a lot of different finance authors on the podcast, and at times the episodes do amazingly because people are like super interested in investing at this point in time, or super interested in what's happening in crypto, or what's happening in the Forex market, or whatever else. But if that episode or that topic doesn't strike at that moment in time with a particular demographic within my audience, then it's not going to perform as well. And it's the exact same for different books too.
Yeah, 100%. So you could think about it like, you know, for me, I was a skinny kid, so I read a lot of books about like fitness, like how to put on muscle. But you know, if someone's a goal is to like lose weight because like they're overweight, then that book might not be like super useful or helpful. So it's really, you know, that's one of the reasons it's hard to give like good book recommendations, because everyone's different. Everyone has like different needs. So that's why I tell people, like, when you ask me for a book recommendation, try to be as specific as possible, so that way I could recommend you a good book versus like just a general book, like, oh, everyone should just read this book. But you know, if that book's not useful for you, you're not going to find it as interesting as I did.
Of course. And one of the other tips that I really liked from yourself was understanding whether, if you enjoyed a book on a particular subject or domain or by a particular author, best believe there's probably some synergy in other topics or other books that you can go across to.
Yes. So I like to call that like the breadcrumb strategy. So like the story of like Hansel and Gretel, like how they left breadcrumbs to find their way home. Like any great book out there leaves like a trail of like breadcrumbs, so that way you could find other books. So the first tip there is just to see if that author that you loved, see if they wrote any books. And I think you'd be surprised. Like people tell me, it's like, oh, I love this book. Are there any books similar to it? And I'm like, oh yeah, the author just wrote like a sequel or something. They're like, oh, I had no idea. So for example, if you're a fan of like Jocko Willink and his book, Discipline Equals Freedom, or Extreme Ownership, he has like a sequel to it that a lot of people might not know about. Another helpful tip is to see what books your favorite author, you know, what were their favorite books? So like, if you're a huge fan of like Ryan Holiday and you read his books, see what books he loved. So he loved like the original works of like the Stoics. Or if you're a fan, like a lot of authors do this on their website, where they'll share, you know, their favorite books, because like those books inspired them. So chances are, if you love their book, you know, you'll love the people that they look up to.
That's such good synergy though, isn't it? I love that. Sorry, the third one for you, Alex.
Yeah. And the third one is just, I like to call it follow the footnotes. So when you read a book, chances are, you know, the author will like cite or reference like other books that they read to do research for their book. So if you read the book like Atomic Habits, he references like BJ Fogg, the author of Tiny Habits, and he references Nir Eyal, the author of Indistractable. because like any author that writes a book, they have to read, you know, anywhere from like 50 to 100 books to find all to like do research and find all these interesting stories and facts and put it together in their book. So you want to see like, okay, you know, pick out the book that you loved, look at the footnotes or maybe the index and see like, okay, what book or author does this author like write a lot about or like reference a lot? Because, you know, if they're pulling out, you know, 50 references from this one book, chances are, you know, that book's super valuable and worth reading as well. And it's also, you know, they're referencing that book because also similar to what they're writing about. So you want to follow the footnotes and see like, you know, what book did this author like really research and dig into and love? And that's like another book worth reading.
That crossover is amazing. And I can completely see that breadcrumb analogy is perfect for it as well, because people really are just kind of following the trail and finding out where they want to end up. And there's such a nice crossover. And I think some of the examples you gave were, for example, if you liked Can't Hurt Me, then Living with a Seal is probably going to be enjoyable. If you liked Atomic Habits, then The Compound Effect can be enjoyable, or Charles Duhigg Habits or whatever else. And when you start to see those links, you quite quickly build up like a little gallery or a little collection of books that are on the one topic that you're just deciding to go deep on at that moment in time. And if you've done the work beforehand, as you were mentioning, like, oh, I'm interested in copywriting just now because I'm building out a sales course, or I'm building this out, or I'm interested in management just now because I'm taking on new people in my career, or I've just been promoted, whatever it is, you can quite quickly seek out the kind of thought leaders in that space and go between them.
Yeah, so this comes from like research studies. So if you think about like famous research studies like the marshmallow test or like Pavlov's dogs, all of these studies are referenced by like hundreds of other scientists or millions of other scientists because like super valuable. And the same thing with books. You can see how valuable a book is by the amount of like citations other people like use to like reference it. So a book like Atomic Habits, because it's like the best-selling nonfiction book, a ton of authors are like pulling out information from it and like citing quotes from James Clear because it's like super valuable. But if you have a book that like not even one author referenced or talked about, it's like chances are that book's not worth reading. So yeah, you really want to follow those breadcrumbs to see like what's like the foundational book in that topic or subject, and then focus on that book.
Do you know what was interesting? It was slightly the converse of this, and I'm still processing exactly what the outputs of it are, but I interviewed Sahil Bloom at the end of 2022, and he was talking about if everyone's reading them, there's no upside. You're going to think the exact same as everyone else. And he was encouraging listeners to consider reading things that were beyond the typical business books and to maybe look at things like fiction, history, and philosophy too. Do you have any books that you consider underrated in that kind of reality?
Yeah. So I think two really good books. One is called The Elephant in the Brain. So it's like a psychology book that talks about how when people do stuff, there's usually like two motives. For example, like charitable donations, like only 1% of charitable donations are anonymous. So if you think about it, if people donate to charity to do good, why are only 1% of donations anonymous? It's because people actually want like, you know, the partial credit or the recognition for doing something good. And that's really like the reward they're looking for. So that's a really interesting book about like human nature and just like, yeah, human motivation. Another great book I think is underrated is called Blue Mind. So it talks about all of the benefits of just like being in water, being on water, just even looking at water, just all like psychological benefits. So just they did a study about like just having like a dentist having a fish tank in his office makes people less stress, and they have like lower pain levels after they get like a cavity filled versus like a dentist's office without a fish tank. Or just even having like an image of like the ocean at your desk will like decrease stress levels for like employees. So it's like really fascinating about like this, the benefits behind, being in the water or even just like looking at water. So that's like a really interesting book that I don't think a lot of people know about.
And it gets you thinking a little bit outside the box. And I think that's what Sahil was sort of pushing people to do and consider, because I think it's very easy. And there's a lot of merit if you're getting into the space to read things that are like well-regarded, well-reviewed, well-promoted. But when you maybe uncover some of these hidden gems, and if at that moment in time that speaks to you, then it's great to explore those other areas too.
Yeah. I would kind of give a caveat there that if you're like new to reading, you kind of want to focus on books that everyone else is reading because they're kind of like proven. And it's kind of like that saying, you need to know the rules before you can break them. The same thing, like, you know, if you want to study habits, you know, you want to read Atomic Habits and Tiny Habits and The Kanban Effect and like all these best-selling habit books. And then you want to go look for the outliers and like, you know, try to find something new. But if you're new to reading, you're not going to be able to tell a difference between which books are good or bad. And then also which, you know, information is like that true or like reliable. So it's definitely, you know, it is good advice. But I think it's like advice for more advanced readers or people like down the road. Versus like, you know, if someone hasn't read one book in their life, I would not tell them, it's like, you know, don't read any of these bestsellers. Go find like a random book for yourself. That's like trying to win the lottery there.
That is such a good point, actually. Like, you almost have to earn the right to step outside the norm.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, otherwise you're kind of, you're trying to be a bit of a maverick. You're trying to run before you can walk.
Yeah, just like, you know, in sports, you know, like Steph Curry in basketball could do like completely new move. But if you try to do that, you know, your high school or college coach is going to pull you out of the games, like stick to the fundamentals. But yeah, once you master the subject, then you could go explore and try new things. So that would be my caveat to that piece of advice.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent footnote to that one in particular. One of the things that we're taught in school in the education system is never to quit the book. We have to complete it in order to be ready to pass the exam or write the essay on it. What's your take on quitting books?
Yeah, so this is one of the many bad habits we pick up from school where it's like, yeah, we're reading for memorization because we know there's going to be like a pop quiz or there's going to be an exam about it and like we want to pass the class. So it's either like we're either forced to read this book that we don't like so that way we can pass the class, or we could not read it and that way we fail the class. So it's like, you know, it's a lose-lose situation. But once you're, you know, out in the real world, you have to realize like you could quit a book anytime you want. And this is what happens, like a lot of people start a book and they get stuck on it because it's just not that interesting. So then they quit reading altogether. And that's like a huge mistake. So it's better to quit one book than to quit reading altogether. And a couple like helpful like rules or strategies that you could apply is one is like, I like to call it like the Costco strategy, where it's like you want to just sample the book. Like whenever you go to a big supermarket, sometimes they give you samples to try before you like buy the entire product. So the same thing goes for books. Like just read 10% of the book, sample it. You know, if you really enjoy it, then buy the whole thing. But, you know, if you're not enjoying it, then return the book or like, you know, donate it or give it to a friend. Another helpful tip is like the three strike strategy. So like, you know, you want to give a book a fair chance. So you want to give it three chances to win you over. So, you know, read the introduction, the first chapter, then maybe one more chapter in the book. And if, you know, if a book hasn't won you over by then, chances are it's not going to get better like later on and you gave it a fair chance. So that's like when you want to quit it. Or if like if you hate quitting books, you could just say, you know, I'm putting this book on hold because it might be the case that it's a good book, but it's just like the wrong timing. So that's like another helpful tip. But yeah, you want to quit boring books to make room for brilliant ones because there are millions of books out there. And if you're spending your time reading a book that's not enjoyable or helpful, it's not like a good use of your time. And there's like millions of books out there that, you know, you'll much rather enjoy reading.
By saying yes to that one book, we're saying no to countless others that would potentially be much more enjoyable, much more valuable to us. And I love those frameworks and that whole Costco idea. And I love so many of your marketing phrases. I can see that brain working to create all these different ones, like yeah. Breadcrumbs is going to stick with me for a long time. But I really like the idea of sampling the book. And I think one of the tips when I went deeper, when you were talking about reading, for example, three chapters of a book to understand, am I going to get maximum value from this at some point? And if the early chapter or maybe the second chapter isn't good, then we should be pretty concerned that we're going to get overall value because the author is going to go all out in those early chapters to just overload on value.
Yeah. So authors spend the most of the time of their book on the first few chapters. So if you think about it, if the first few chapters aren't good, it's not going to get better later on. Just the same thing with the movie. Like, there's rarely a movie that you watch like half an hour of and they're like, oh yeah, this was not good, but watch like the last 30 minutes of it. And that's why I tell like authors too, is like you want to front load the book with value because people will say like, oh, this book is amazing. Just read the first two chapters. That's all you need to know. No one ever says like, oh, this book is amazing. Just read the last two chapters because no one ever gets that far because, you know, no one's going to have to go through all of that garbage to get to the gems. And even when people say it's like, oh, but you know, there might be a hidden gem in this book. It's like, well, that is possible, but you want to think of reading as like, how much wisdom per page does this book have? So if it has one piece of like wisdom out of like 250 pages, that's not as good as like a life-changing book that has, you know, 15 pieces of wisdom in 250 pages. So you really want to think about like how much wisdom per page am I getting? because time is like your most limited resource. So So if you find yourself, you know, reading a book you're not enjoying, quit it, pick up a different one, or, you know, put it on hold and you can always come back to it later.
Yeah. I mean, you've done amazingly well to grow across so many different social platforms like TikTok, even. You amassed a following really quickly on there. The reason for that is you understand how to retain attention. And if you don't retain attention early on, then somebody's gone. And books are exactly the same. If they don't give value in the early stages, you're going to be like, am I going to commit to another 180, 250 pages of this? Probably not. And it kind of forced you to stop. In terms of like sampling books as well, I think we're in an age where we're extremely lucky the amount of pages like yourself that have summaries or have reviews of books. There's almost an opportunity to dip the toe in the water and be like, okay, well, if Alex resonates with this book and it's his recommendation on finance, or it's his recommendation on health, or it's his recommendation on mindset, then it gives you an opportunity to do things before we've even started.
Yeah, for sure. So what I like to tell people is, like, sometimes people think like, oh, why do I have to read books? I can just read book summaries. But that's the same thing. I like to think of book summaries as like movie trailers. So like, it's like saying, why watch The Godfather or Inception when I could just watch a movie trailer that's, you know, those movie trailers that just spoil the whole plot. It's like, yeah, you understand like what's going to happen, like the general overview, but you don't know the details. You don't know the character's name. You don't know the backstory. It's the same thing for books. So you want to treat book summaries as movie trailers. Like if you read a book summary, or like you read one of my book summaries and you're like, okay, this sounds pretty interesting, then you want to get the book and like dive into it. You know, if you don't like the movie trailer or the book summary, then you probably won't like, you know, diving into the whole thing. So that's another way to like kind of sample books to figure out what you're interested in, what you like, and then go deeper into it if that does interest
you. It's that opportunity to whet your appetite rather than completely satiate it.
Yeah, for sure. That's well said.
In terms of improving our comprehension on books, that's something I'm really interested in, because I think there's a lot of intellectual masturbation, and you've read so many books, and I have total respect when somebody like you is like, I've read over 200 books and these are some of the lessons that I've learned, and you share them because you can share the lessons. Whereas I see online somebody's like, I'm doing a book challenge, I'm going to read one a week, I'm going to read 52 this year. But then I'm like, I wonder if they can even tell me what impacted them the most across all these books, or which book had the greatest impact, or which book they would recommend for this topic. And I really feel that it's much more beneficial to have a deeper comprehension of a smaller number than it is to have this huge accumulation, but very surface level. So what are your advices on increasing comprehension?
Yeah, so probably the biggest piece of advice is to highlight less and write more. So a lot of people, you know, when they read the book, they're like highlighting the text, you know, spending a lot of time doing that. But that actually doesn't help you like remember more of the information or anything like that. It just makes kind of like the book look prettier, or makes it look like you have read a lot of it. What you actually want to do is, like, let's say, you know, you read a chapter, then you want to, like, at the end of that chapter, just grab a pen and then write down like two or three lessons that you learned and put it in like your own words, because you want to actually process the information. And you want to do this while like looking back into the text. Like, the way memory works is like the more work you put in, the more you'll get out of it. So if you kind of like forcing your brain to try to like recall that information, it's like, okay, I just read this chapter. What was that lesson about? What was that story about? Or what was kind of like the point of like what was the author trying to tell me here? And then you want to like write it down at the end of that chapter. So I would say that's like the biggest tip. And you'll notice like the better the book, the more notes you'll want to take, because it just has like so many gems. It's like, okay, I just have to write this information down. And like, yeah, like what you were saying, I think once you stumble upon a book that's like really life-changing, one, of course, you want to take a ton of notes on it, but you also want to spend time like rereading it, because it just has so much wisdom. It's hard to get through all of it like just one go. Just like if you take like your favorite movie of all time, you had to watch that movie two or three times or more, because there's so many like little details that you missed. And each time you watch it, it's like, oh, I can't believe I missed that part, or like, oh, now the story makes a lot more sense. Same thing goes for books. So if you find like one of those life-changing books, don't just immediately go jump into like brand new book that might be mediocre or okay. It's like, spend a little time, reflect on what you learned, write down those key lessons, try to apply those lessons, and then yeah, revisit that book, because there's chances are there's a ton more that you could learn from that book.
That's great. And regarding your note-taking system, I think that's almost a pattern that people need to break. Much like quitting a book in school, we're taught not to deface the books because it's typically not our property. It's rented from the library, or it's given to us by the school to return, or it's really expensive when we're hoping to sell it on to the next intake of students the year after us. If it's anything like my politics books that I was reading in university, I was definitely keen to sell them on and get the money for going out back then. What, in terms of a note-taking strategy, would you recommend that goes a little bit deeper than we've just discussed?
Yeah, so my process is like, you know, as I'm reading the book, I do like, you know, highlight if I come across like interesting quote or insight or piece of advice. Then I'll open up the front cover of the book where I'll create my own table of contents. So like, you know, I'll write page 15, here's an interesting lesson I learned, or page 34, here's another interesting lesson. And then after, you know, I'm done with the book, then I'll open up the back cover and I'll write down like, okay, here are like, you know, I'll look back through my highlights and then I'll say like, okay, so let me just pull out like three most important lessons I learned from this book. And then on the other side of the back cover of the book, I'll write down, okay, I have these three lessons. How can I actually go and apply that in my book? And that's like basically what I do in my newsletter, where I like read a book every week and summarize it. And then I'll share like, okay, here are three lessons I learned from the book, and here are three ways you could apply those lessons. Because yeah, the whole point of like the note-taking and the reading books is to like take action with the books. Because yeah, if you just spend your time, you know, reading 10 diet books, you're not going to lose weight. Or if you spend your time reading 10 fitness books, you're not going to gain muscle. It's actually, you have to go apply what you learn from these books. So it's really, yeah, a good acronym to remember is a read. So read the book, extract the key lessons, apply those lessons, and then debrief like the results. And then, yeah, go back and like look on your notes and see like what else you could apply.
I think there's a lot to be said for when people read the same book as a friend at the same time, or if they're in a book club, because one of the number one ways that I've become much more articulate and much more able to recall lessons from things I've read or listened to has been teaching on to others on the show. Mm-hmm. And it's been a godsend from that perspective. But equally, and this is not to say that I bore all my friends with the different concepts that I'm thinking about, but when I'm at a walk with a friend or training with a friend at the gym, I'm talking about different ideas that I've consumed, and best believe I'm much better able to then explain those ideas because I've done the work to actually do that. And those stick with me so much stronger. So I can only imagine that if I was in a reading club, for example, and we all read the same book at the same time, I've written down the three lessons, and then I speak to them about like in a round table or whatever format, it's going to stick with me so much more. And I'm hopeful that I'm going to implement those so much stronger. So I can definitely see the case for like organizations like that, for example.
Yeah. And this actually came across a really cool study recently. It's called the Prodigy Effect. So they took two group of students, and the first group, they said, okay, just read this material because you have a test coming up on it. The second group of students, they said, okay, read this material. You're going to have to teach it to another student, and then you're going to have to take a test on it. And they had both groups take the test. And the interesting part was the second group, they never actually had to teach the student. They were just told like, oh, you're going to teach the student. So just the expectation that you might have to teach what you learned results in them getting better test scores and remembering more of the information. Because if you're reading something, so that's what I try to do. Like whenever I read a book, it's like, okay, I'm reading this book with the expectation that I'm going to teach someone else about it. So even if like you don't tell your friends about it, even if you don't share it on social media or anything, just that expectation of, oh, someone might ask me about this, so I got to really focus on this book, or really got to remember these lessons or write down these lessons. That will help you remember more. And then, of course, like you said, if you actually do the teaching part, then you get even more benefits, because it kind of reveals like gaps in your knowledge and helps you like realize like, okay, what do I actually know, or like what do I actually understand? Because I think for a lot of people, they'll read a book and they'll be like, okay, yeah, like I understand what was happening. But then if your friend asks you like, oh, can you explain it to me, or can you tell me like what, you know, what you learned from this book, and then you have a hard time articulating what you've learned, that kind of points out like, oh, maybe I don't actually understand, or maybe I don't remember. And so that just helps you like learn a lot more. So yeah, just the expectation of, you know, oh, I might have to teach someone about this will help you remember more. And then if you actually do go teach other people about it, you get like double the benefits from
it. Yeah, there's two things popping off in my head. Have you read The Expectation Effect by David Robson? I think, yeah, you would love it. I've had him on the show. He's done Modern Wisdom and lots of other good pods as well. He's absolutely excellent. And that whole expectation effect actually dictates what our outcomes are to some extent. And some people are like, oh, that's manifestation. And it's not manifestation. It's actually the psychological powers. And he showed a study within it where people, if they thought they had a gluten intolerance, actually had breakouts in hives and the stomach discomfort off the back of eating gluten, even if there is no like evidence that they've got celiac disease. And that was amazing. And the second thing that's popping off for me is, in the same way, if you have an expectation that you're going to have to teach something, you're obviously going to do the work a lot harder. I know you're into your training as well. And I sometimes say to friends that are maybe like going to the gym a lot and not seeing results, I'm like, okay, let me see you train. And they're kind of like going through the motions, like, yeah, I've been in 5 days a week this week. I've done push-pull legs, upper lower, and I'm smashing it. And I'm like, okay, show me a few of your sets on camera. And they'll be like, oh, like, and I'll be like, look, that's like an RPE, like 7. You've got like at least 3 or 4 reps in the tank. Yeah. And I'm like, here's a little framework for you. Train as if Instagram was watching. So like put up your squat and take it to the wall, hit the depth that you would hit if you were going to post it publicly. And I think that's the same sort of framework in terms of like, I'm reading this book as if I'm going to have to explain it to somebody down the line, then I'm probably going to put in a little bit more effort and I'm going to work harder to retain the information.
Yeah, I really like that framework. It's like, imagine, there's people like watching and they're, it just forces you to like put on your best like performance and like put your best foot forward there.
Yeah, it was something else that came up as well. I interviewed a chap called Daniel Priestley when I took the podcast on tour to Dubai in December there. And he's had some brilliant books. And he was saying so many people want to build like a personal brand, but if you were like to show them your Twitter or your LinkedIn or your socials and let them have a full look around, if you would be embarrassed by like the most like prestigious people in your industry or the most prestigious people in your circle seeing that, then you've got a real problem. You better address the quality of what you're putting out there. And I just like, I like these little frameworks that make us think about how our status would look if we were to actually do this task properly, then we'd probably do it properly.
Yeah. That's a great piece of advice. Yeah. That's one of the reasons like why you want to pin like the best of your content to the top of your page, whether it's like Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. So that way, if someone does come up across your page, it's like, okay, here's what they're about. Here's, you know, their best content. So really kind of, it's a great digital first impression.
Yeah, I love it. Do you ever read more than one book at once?
Yeah, so usually have like 2 books at a time, sometimes 3, but any more than 3 is like way too much. It's kind of like if you're watching like 3 or 4 TV series, like you start to mix up the plot and the characters, again, it's too confusing. But I think you want to have at least 2 books. I like to call it having like a snack and a meal book. You know, sometimes you're like, you know, really hungry, you have like a lot of time for like a full dinner. So sometimes you want like that potatoes and steak and broccoli. Other times, like you don't have that much time, or you just want like something small, like a snack. You know, you just want like an apple or like, you know, some carrots or like a banana. Same thing goes for like your reading appetite. It's like, you know, if you don't have a lot of time, you just want like a short book that's not super dense. Just maybe just like a lighter like fiction read or something like that. But if you do have a lot of time, you want like a meal book. So something like a philosophy book, or something like a complex like storybook, where it's like you really got to sit down and you got to spend like 10 minutes just catching up with the plot or the characters or like understanding the word. Like if you're reading like Friedrich Nietzsche or something, it's like that's not a book you can read, you know, 5 minutes a day. Like you need to spend like at least half an hour sitting down reading that book, you know, looking up the you know, double meanings behind the sentences. So you want to think about your food appetite the same way you want to think about your reading appetite the same way you think about your food appetite, where it's like you want to have one book to read, you know, when you have a lot of time and energy, and then one other book to read when you don't have a lot of time or energy.
Yeah, great concept. And I know you've spoken about maybe books like The Daily Stoic, where it's like a one pager a day is your kind of lighter book, and then something a bit more heavy, like a Nietzsche or maybe a Jordan Peterson or something like that, that's like your secondary book that requires that little bit more focus or that little bit more appetite, if you were to follow your analogy.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to understand when Alex and Books started to come about in line with your passion for actually reading.
Yeah, so it started this page back in 2017, where it's just like, okay, I'm reading these books. Let me just like share a picture of it, like on Instagram or like on social media. And I remember like one of the first pictures I took is just the book 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel, like great book, and just like a bowl of oatmeal. Like that was my like literally one of my first posts, because like I did not know anything about social media. And then later on, I started just posting like more like book summaries, where I would like post a picture of the book and then post like the highlights of the book. And then I started doing like, you know, videos and like reels, like here are like 5 books on productivity or 5 books on stoicism. So it went from like just being like a hobby to like a, you know, side hustle to like a part-time job, and then eventually became like a full-time job. But definitely was like a long journey. It took like 5 years to go from like just starting to making it into like a full-time career. But yeah, it was a long journey and a hard journey, that's for sure.
What I think people will find interesting is that I know you were working at Podcast Notes while you were building Alex and Books, and there's a big crossover in the skill set there. How would you explain that to the listener?
Yeah, so Podcast Notes, I was just listening to podcasts and writing book summaries. And then with Alex and Books, I was just reading books and writing, you know, book summaries. So it was always this mission of like, you know, I love learning, I love educating myself. And I also love like teaching what I'm like learning with others, or sharing what I'm learning with others. So that was always like the core, I guess, mission or North Star for me. And it was really great because, like, you know, when Alex and Books wasn't making a ton, I was working more on podcasts and notes. And then as Alex and Books started taking off, then I started working less at podcast notes. And these guys were awesome, you know, awesome company, awesome brand, still like hang out and talk to them today. So it was just really cool as, you know, as your side hustle grows and gets bigger and bigger, then I was able to decrease the amount of time on like this full-time job I was working. So I was just really fortunate there.
And I think excitingly, you were sharpening the same tools at the same time, albeit a book slightly different from a podcast, of course it is, but the ability to synthesize that information down into a review or explaining the clear concepts from each, it's the same skill set broadly.
Yeah, it's a skill set of consuming information, understanding it, and then summarizing it. And also a lot of the podcasts I would listen to were like authors. So, you know, if I really love the podcast, I would go get their book and dive deeper into it. And then also, they would be sharing like similar lessons from their book. So sometimes it could just be like, oh, I listened to the podcast. I really enjoyed it. Let me go apply the lessons. And I don't even have to read the book to like start that journey. Because again, the same goal here is to like improve your life. So whether that's through a podcast or through a book, there's a lot of ways to do it. It's really just, you know, finding that information, understanding it, and then going and applying it.
I think that synergy is so, so valuable. And equally, that's another huge point that if we think about considering whether we're going to love a book, listen to the author on a podcast and you'll quite quickly understand if you're going to vibe with their kind of ideas that they're talking about or whether you want to go a little bit deeper. So that's maybe another area for people considering whether they would go and buy the book and listen to it. And I think authors know that nowadays, and that's why they come on shows like mine, and that's why they were doing your show as well.
For sure. That's why authors go on the podcast tour. And I discovered so many books that way. I call it the podcast strategy. So if you listen to, you know, a podcast, it's usually an author on it because, you know, they're promoting their new book. And if you listen to the author for like 2 or 3 hours, chances are you'll love their book where they dive even deeper into it. So like there have been a lot of books from like the Huberman podcast. So one was Dr. Anna Lemke, who wrote the book The Dopamine Nation. So I loved her podcast episode. So I'm like, I want to learn more about dopamine detox. So then I got her book and I completely loved it. So yeah, if you listen to the podcast and you love the author there, go and buy their book.
Yeah, I love it. How have you adapted your content on Alex and Books over the years? Because you've been on so many different platforms and grown really successfully across all of them.
So I think one big realization is that your audience on each platform will be different, similar, but different. So for example, on Instagram, it's more people, you know, younger people in their early 20s versus on Twitter and LinkedIn, it's more like working professional. But even Twitter and LinkedIn, Twitter is more like entrepreneurs and like investors and like, you know, very business type people. And then LinkedIn is more like knowledge workers, white collar workers, that type of thing. So even though I'm sharing similar content on each platform, the audience is like slightly different. So, you know, I would say like, you know, if you have a beauty or fitness product, you want to be on Instagram because it's more like visual based. But if you're selling something like an educational or informational product like I am, you want to be on like LinkedIn and Twitter because that's where more of your audience is. So I noticed like when I launched the course, even though my Instagram audience was twice as big as my Twitter audience, I got the same amount of sales because just the density of readers and like knowledge workers was bigger on Twitter than Instagram. So I really think about like, you know, what product or company am I trying to build, and then like where does my audience spend most of the time on? Because yeah, you know, having 100,000 YouTube subscribers is not the same as having 100,000 TikTok followers, because the audience demographic will be completely different.
I always debate and laugh with my friends. What do we think a TikTok follower is worth versus everything else? I think like 10,000 TikTok followers is worth like one LinkedIn connection or one Twitter follower. I just think the value is so low because the actual income is really low as well. My friend and previous guest, Darren Lee, he hosted an amazing show called Kickoff Sessions, and he always talks about the average income on LinkedIn is like $60,000 a year. So if you've got a product, people on LinkedIn actually have the money to buy it, whereas on TikTok, unless you're maybe selling something that's very like B2C based and very like quick turnaround, like in Scotland and the UK, there's a lot of people selling like tanning products or like supplements that are like super low cost. Yeah. We're talking like £15 tops, or like a t-shirt or something that's like drop shipped. Whereas if you're selling something that's like an info product, there's almost like a deeper connection and a higher price point. So depending on what platform you're on, it's going to depend on your penetration rate.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say that even the most valuable social media product is actually your email newsletter. Because if you think about it, you know, if you have really good engagement, let's say like incredible engagement, it's probably 10% of your audience. So if you have 100,000 Instagram followers, 10% of that would be maybe 10,000 people see it. And that, we're talking about like a viral post there. But if you have an Instagram newsletter, the average open rate is between like 40 to 50%. So if you have 100,000 newsletter subscribers, that's 40,000 to 50,000 people. So that's the thing you'll notice, like all these big creators like James Clear, you know, Mark Manson, all of them have, or all of them focus on trying to get email subscribers because you have direct, direct bridge of communication with your audience. And then also, you can't get banned on email. You can't get shadow banned. You know, no one could take it away from you, but your Instagram account could get hacked. You could get shadow banned. We saw this on Twitter a couple of years ago before Elon Musk took over. A lot of accounts were shadow banned. And even though they were posting content, no one was seeing it. But with your newsletter, it's like, you're not going to get shadow banned. So I would say, yeah, like if you're a content creator and you haven't started building an email list, you want to start doing that today.
Yeah, I can completely resonate with that. And you're not reliant on the algorithm and you own that list to some extent. I mean, maybe Gmail own the list technically, or MailChimp or wherever it's hosted, but you could download it into an Excel and it's yours to hold on to and use as well. What's been your process for monetizing the platform over the years to allow you to go full-time on Alex and Books and to grow it to where it is now?
Yeah. So when I first started off, it was just like me posting like book reviews and like summaries. And then I, as I grew bigger, like publishers and authors were like, oh, you know, can we send you this free book? And I was like, oh, sweet. Now I'm getting free books. So, that, you know, that started saving me some money. And then as it got even bigger, it was like, oh, can we pay you to post about these books? So then it was like authors and publishers, you know, paying me to like read books. So like that was like the dream job. But then it got to the point where it's like, a lot of the books I was reading, I wasn't like actually enjoying. It's like, you're just getting paid to read them. So I'm like, you know, this is not like the path I want to go down. So that's when the idea for the course kind of came together, where it's like, one, people were asking me like, oh, how do I, you know, find books? How do I remember more? How do I take notes? And I'm like, all right, why don't I just create a course where I have all my best like reading tips and all of that in like one place. And then if you want it, you know, just pay whatever, like $98, $99, and you'll get all of my knowledge right there. So that's the way it kind of switched from like monetization, from like doing basically like book ads or book promos to like switching to the course. But I have made like a lot of mistakes along the way. So like I experimented with like selling bookmarks, but that's like a low margin product where it's like you need a huge amount of volume to make a ton of money with that. I tried doing like merch, but you know, there's not a lot of people out there that, you know, representing like reading or like, you know, super hardcore readers. So that was also like a, you know, fun experiment. And also like a lot of creators make money with affiliate links, so like being an Amazon affiliate. But that's more like for like tech products, because, you know, Amazon pays you like 4 or 5%, but if you sell a book for like $20, you know, you basically make 80 cents off that purchase. And so that's like a really hard way to make money as well, versus like a tech creator, if they sell a camera for $2,000, that's, you know, like $200 or something like that. From that purchase.
That's such a huge point when it comes to Amazon. Are you familiar with Chris Williamson? He hosts Modern Wisdom podcast. Yeah. So Chris was one of the first guests on this show, and I've got to know him quite well over the years. And he was saying that his kind of lead magnet was 100 Books to Read Before You Die or something like that. And they're all really, really good recommendations. It's a great ebook. And he had all the Amazon affiliate links within for each book. But he was like, honestly, there's no money to be made here, because if somebody buys Atomic Habits for £12, you're getting like 50p. And even though you put the affiliate link in there, when somebody's scrolling through this thing on maybe their laptop, they'll go on their phone to buy on Amazon and they won't use your link. So there's a lot to be said for like people have misconceptions around that. Whereas the guys on YouTube that are maybe doing like a review of like a new camera or the new iPhone or the new gadget or whatever it is that's really high value, of course their percentage actually turns into something meaningful if they start to penetrate their audience. And I think that's a really key thing for creators, to not get fooled into thinking affiliate marketing is like some sort of golden goose.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's why like all these content creators or all these finance content creators make a good amount of money, because they're affiliates for like credit cards, where a credit card might pay you anywhere from $300 to $500 for just getting one person to sign up, versus, you know, if I get one person to buy a book, like you said, I'll make less than a dollar. So it's really about like what product you're being an affiliate for. And you want to be a, you know, affiliate for like a high ticket item, like, you know, like a camera or a laptop or a credit card. That's like more better source of income versus like trying to sell books.
Yeah, so it's so interesting, isn't it? And I think you quite often see this with podcasts that grow to a certain extent, and I've had numerous different sponsors across the show, and I've always had, like, my audience is quite broad. We were discussing beforehand, generally interested in like self-development, brain, body, business, but there isn't like one product that audience are all going to want. I have to have something that's quite broad, and the audience might want, they might not. Some people listen, but like, oh, I'm amazing, I get a discount code on something that I buy anyway, or whatever else, like whether it's meal prep or supplements or whatever it is, or clothing that somebody's going for. But I've hosted guys on the show, a guy called Dr. Daniel Crosby. He wrote a book called The Behavioral Investor, and Daniel's got a podcast that's potentially got less downloads than my show, but his sponsorship deals are insane because everyone that listens to it's a financial advisor. And all the products right. that are promoted on the show are for financial advisors. So the penetration rate's amazing and the return on value is amazing and the product cost is really high. So any sponsor can be like, oh, I'm basically like just, I'm paying a small acquisition cost to get these guys because I'm speaking directly to them. Whereas if you've got something that's a bit broader or something that's lower ticket or lower value that you're selling, then of course you can't pay the show or the host tons and tons of money to promote it.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's like the quality of your audience, not just quantity. Like I knew one healthcare content creator who he had like, you know, I think 10,000 followers or less than that, but he was making like $1 million a year because he was selling like this healthcare courses for like, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 each to like all these companies. So it's not just like how many followers you have, but it's like, who are the people following you? It's like better have, you know, 100 CEOs following you than 100,000 you know, like broke college students or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I love that you've gone down the course route because I think that online education is still very young and it's in its infancy. And there's been like, I think it's old enough that people have gone through to see like what's actually like, there's the whole Warren Buffett quote, when the tide comes out, we'll see you swimming in those swim trunks or a version of that. And I think there's been a lot of people online that have been found to be promoting education that's not got depth to it. But when you've got sites like Kajabi, I've used Thinkific for my podcast masterclass, people have been able to like see what the quality of these things look like. And when you produce something as in-depth as The Art of Reading and the amount of depth that goes within that course, like 3 hours of content and like genuinely like game-changing lessons within it that have gone deeper than we've been able to go today, it's so valuable to see that that's like that's available out there for a relatively low cost. And there's so many creators now that are turning towards that. I think it's validating that space.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, what I like to do is like, I like to test my content on like Twitter or Instagram, see like what resonates with people and then dive deeper into that by creating like lesson about it, like in the course. And like a good way to think about it is like you want to turn your FAQs, so frequently asked questions, into like NCIs, new content ideas. So if there's like a common question people keep asking you about it, that's like when you want to create content about it. And then if people are asking even more questions about it, that's when it might be worth turning into like a lesson and diving deeper into it. So for example, for me, it's like my note-taking process. So create content about that, and people are like asking me like, okay, how do I take notes on this? Or why do you do this? And then it's like, okay, that's where turning into like a complete lesson. So you kind of want like test these ideas, you know, start with the tweet, then maybe a Twitter thread, then maybe a video, and then if people still want more, that's like when you turn into a course. So yeah, I think that's a great way to kind of test your content. And then yeah, you could put all your best lessons into a course, and that way you just have like, you know, a great product where if someone wants to learn everything you know, they could basically download your brain, aka your course, and just like learn from you.
Yeah, great framework for doing that and just testing whether it's a viable product to take to market, because unless you do that, you just build in silence and then you kind of launch it and you're like waiting for the sales to come flying in or the interest to come flying in. Whereas if people are asking that question regularly, and one of the things that I've learned from the podcast over the years, like for example, when I ask the audience on a story box on Instagram, who do you want to hear on the podcast? You might get 3 or 4 people say like one name. That's actually going to be a really good performing episode because 2 or 3 people have been brave enough to say it, but there's like thousands working that are like, I'd love to see that guy on the show and talk to Colin, but they just haven't said it. And I think in the same way, if like obviously it's much larger scale, but like 20 people ask you about your note-taking process, guess what? There's probably thousands that are sitting in those followings that you've built that are really interested in it. They just haven't stepped up and asked you, or you maybe haven't had a chance to see that DM.
Yeah, I think the internet rule, it was like 1-9-90. So 1% of people create, you know, 1% of like content creators create almost all the content. 9% of people actually comment and like you know, start a conversation or, you know, ask questions. And then 90% of people are just like lurking. Like I know like a lot of people on like Reddit, just like they call them just lurkers, like people that have accounts or maybe don't even have accounts and just like, you know, follow posts, but they never like upvote or they never comment. It's the same thing for all these social media contents platforms. Like I know a lot of people, you know, they have a Twitter account, but then they don't follow people, or they follow people, but they never engage or interact with them. So yeah, if you're just getting a few people messaging you, I would multiply that number by 10. So, you know, if you get 3 people asking for a podcast guest, that could be, you know, a 30 or even 300 people that actually want
Yeah, huge point, huge point. I know that you self-published your own book, which was like a selection of quotes that you selected. What was the process for that?
Yeah, so as I was like studying The Art of Reading, I kept coming across all these super successful people that just had, you know, these great quotes about like the importance of reading, or just like the value of reading books. And this was everyone from like Elon Musk to Steve Jobs to like Aristotle, Plato, and like people, you know, ancient philosophers. So then I literally just started collecting these quotes, and I'm like, oh, maybe what would be a fun little project was to like self-publish a book, to just learn the self-publishing route. And then I think it'd be helpful for people, you know, if they need some motivation or inspiration to read, they could just open this book, open up to any page, and then read this quote by someone that's super successful or famous about like why they enjoy reading books. Because reading books is kind of like one of the few life hacks. It's like, you know, for $10, you could download, you know, 10 years of information in just a couple hours. And basically, like almost every successful person you come across, they're like a big time reader. So it was just like a fun project to like learn how to self-publish a book, and also help inspire and motivate people to become readers, or give them a reason to become a reader.
It'd be a great present as well to send to someone that you're trying to encourage to make better life choices, because we've all had that friend that's reached out when they've had a breakup or a problem with their business or their career, and you're like, oh, like you should read this book or this book, and they're like, oh man, I'm not a reader, or I'm not into that. And you're like, okay, like I need to ease you in. And like maybe like that would be like the snack book that we were talking about, in terms of like that one page a day or that 2 pages a day that kind of whets the appetite to go and read something a little bit heavier. I think you really found a little gap in the market there with that.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, I would say like if you just name like any successful person, chances are there's like a quote in the book there from them. So, you know, any like big tech CEO, you know, they're all readers. Any successful like writers, they're all readers. Philosophers, they're all readers. So it's like if all these, you know, successful people in life are readers, it's like, oh, maybe I should give reading a chance.
Yeah, and here's definitely a quote that you'll want to add to it next time you maybe revisit for a second edition. But Dakota Robertson, when he was on the show, he said, if you're a nerd, lift weights. If you're jacked, read books. A jacked nerd is unstoppable. And I really, really believe that, because I know when my reading habit's in full flow, and it has been for all of 2024 so far, and I feel great. I'm more articulate in the show. My vocabulary improves and it expands. And I'm just genuinely in a better spot to like think about these things. And of course, my sleep improves as well, because I'm reading pre-bed and I'm away from my devices. So I really think there's so much on the other end of that, and I'm excited that we've managed to kind of paint the way forward for people today, Alex.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this conversation, Colin. And yeah, just to agree with that, when I was like first starting my reading journey, I noticed like successful people do two things: they read books and they work out. So I'm like, all right, I really have to do those things. So I would say, yeah, if you're already reading books, start working out, and if you're already working out, start reading books. And then if you just do those two things, life will be pretty good.
A powerful combination, Alex. I've loved this conversation. I know the listeners will as well. Where should they head towards if they want to continue the conversation with you?
So you can find me on basically all social media platforms. Just type in Alex and Books. I would say like, you know, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn are like the most popular ones. And then, yeah, also alexandbooks.com, where you can find my newsletter, where I basically read a book a week, summarize it, and then also share like a tip on how to read more books or how to become a better reader every week. And the newsletter is free. So that's probably kind of where you can find my best content.
Brilliant stuff. All of those will be linked in the show notes to you below. Thank you to you, Alex, and thank you to you, the listener. We'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.